Radio.
Manufacturing Live by Father Greg Morgan. This talk is part of Life to the Full, held every second Tuesday evening at All Saints Parish in Liverpool, Sydney.
What better place to start than with our very own Bishop Anthony Fisher? I was told recently by an academic that Bishop Anthony is perhaps one of the leading bioethicists in the world. He's in the top five. A couple of years back, I was down with him in Melbourne, and the topic of IVF, in vitro fertilisation, came up. And he recounted this recent experience he had on national television. The ABC invited Bishop Anthony to come and speak about the family. But what an innocuous topic, what a nice topic to come and speak about, the family. Surely the ABC has more in store than this. So he turns up on the stage, he's about to go live, and across from him he notices a mum and a dad holding a baby. 3, 2, 1. Bishop Anthony Fisher, why do you hate this child? Bishop Anthony was very startled. Of course, come to talk about the family. But in reality, come to talk about IVF. And this child had been procured through IVF, which we'll get to a bit later. Now, Bishop Fisher's response, given that it was so much on the spot, was absolutely masterful. He said two things. Of course I don't hate this child. This child is beautiful. I love this child. I love babies. I love life. But surely if I ran up to a mum on the street and took the baby from that pram, would you say that was a good way to get a child? So in other words, he made two points. He said life, no matter how it is conceived, is always good, always beautiful, and always sacred. But he made the point that not every way that we get a child is good. We can all agree on those two points. Life is good, but not every way in which you can procure a child is good. For example, stealing a child from someone's pram. In tonight's talk, I want to talk about really those two things. I want to demonstrate that the Church's position on the beginnings of human life is commensurate with science. I want to talk specifically about IVF, because this is perhaps one of the most misunderstood of the Church's moral teachings. And then I'll invite Ron, a very prolific and great advocate of the pro-life movement, to share what he's doing about being a young Catholic and being pro-life. To begin with, we need to clear up a few factors. The first is a popular misconception. I've often heard people say, Father, I'm pro-life, but I'm pro-IVF. In other words, to many people, to be pro-life means to be just against abortion. Many people really don't understand the intricacies of what IVF actually does. I had a couple come to me recently, a couple months ago, and they say, Father, look, we're getting married, and it's very unlikely that I'll be able to conceive, so we're going to use IVF. I said, no, you're not. I was that familiar with this couple, I could say that. She goes, why not? The Church doesn't disapprove of it. The Church only disapproves of abortion. And then I explain, do you realise how many lives, how many abortions take place through IVF? And her face went red. She was shocked. Just never had even the minimal thought that there might be something wrong with this process. So that's the first thing. To be pro-life as a Catholic means to be pro-life against abortion, against contraception, against IVF. It's a much bigger picture than simply the abortion issue. The second issue that I often hear is, well, before we even get down to the nitty-gritties of why the Church is against abortion, what right does the Church have to say anything about pro-life matters or about life or death issues? What moral authority does this ancient Christ have on what I choose to do with my life? Should the Catholic Church then, as the leader of the Greens Party said, Christine Milner, should the Church just be about promoting social justice? Get out of the issue of education, catechesis, and morality. Well, the answer is this. that Jesus taught us moral values, and he expects us to live and abide by them and promote them. Never in the scriptures do you hear Jesus say, believe in me, do what I say, except in morality. Many people want the Jesus that says, look, it doesn't matter what you do as long as you love me. But our Lord was very clear. He said, if you love me, you'll keep my commands. You'll keep my commands, especially when it comes to upholding the dignity of human life, the most sacred gift, the most sacred part of our Catholic culture. So the third thing that you'll often hear is this. Well, the Catholic Church might promote life, but the Catholic Church is anti-science. It's anti-healthcare. The Catholic Church, in reality, is one of the biggest providers of healthcare in the world. One of the biggest. One of the biggest providers of healthcare, particularly to people with HIV/AIDS. You often hear the church marred by this idea that the church is anti-homosexual and church condemns people with HIV/AIDS. It's simply not true. Look at the facts. The reality is the church says that science is a good thing. The church promotes scientific research. The church says, yes, we should use our intellects, we should use our capacities to take dominion over what God has given us, to exercise that degree of investigation and control to promote Christian ethos. But the church says that science must be conditioned. In other words, science has its peaks. Science is not all about science. Just because we can do something doesn't mean we should. Cardinal Pell every year donates $100,000 to adult stem cell research. The Catholic Church was one of the first founders of public hospitals. The Church has always promoted science that promotes the integrity of the human person. But what the Church does not approve is when science thinks that they have complete control over the truth. So I have this intention to cure, and that is good, but it doesn't matter how many people I kill in the process to get what I want, to get my results. And the reason why people make this mistake is simply they don't have the moral principles to guide their actions. Everyone here would agree by this principle, we call the first principle of practical reason. Everyone would agree with this, that we should do good and avoid evil. I don't think anyone in this world would disagree. But some would disagree in the church's position that you can never use evil to do good. That the ends justify the means. That some people would say the church is wrong on that issue. So really, when we come down to the church being supposedly anti-science, we have to separate two forms of science. The first concerns itself with correcting disabilities, restoring life, promoting the beauty and the sanctity of the human being. And it understands that it is always wrong to take innocent human life. The second form of science says, well, we intend to bring out good results, but the means that we might use to achieve that end might involve degrading the dignity of the human person, even to the point of absolute murder of the innocent. So they're the two forms of science. The church approves of the first, negates the second. Fourth and final point as a background issue is to ask ourselves, well, if we're pro-life, if we're reasonable people, why is it so difficult for us then to converse with the world? Why are people so stubborn? Why do people accuse us of being so stubborn that we can't even communicate, dialogue with so many people? The issue comes down to one thing. It's what I call the autonomy bandwagon. That when someone says, look, I'm going to live by my life by the principle that I will do what I want and I won't let anyone tell me what I should do, it's very hard to engage with that person. Dr. Edwards, the professor of human production at Cambridge, pretty much said that he was involved in IVF because I wanted to play God. I want to be God. This is what he said. I wanted to find out exactly who was in charge, whether it was God himself or whether it was the scientist in the laboratory. It was us, the scientist. The Pope now looks totally stupid. You can never ban anything. You can say, hang on a minute, but you can never say never. And you can never say that this is the worst decision for humankind. Otherwise, you will look a fool. Now there are as many Roman Catholics using IVF as there are Protestants. Our calling is to challenge this idea that there is such a thing as absolute autonomy. The idea that I can do whatever I want. That is the culture we're fighting up against. That is why it's so hard to talk to someone about IVF and say, well, look, they want a child, it's a good thing. It's about their freedom. Because when someone has committed themselves to that belief and entrenched themselves in that culture, it's so hard to talk reason. It's a proven fact. So the key point of the process I want to talk about tonight is how perhaps we can still promote the reasonable teachings, but with our own minds and own hearts have a clear consensus and good scientific understanding of why it is the church teaches what it teaches. So that's the background. Now to the nitty-gritty. First is the question of when does life begin? Now, I don't want to spend too much time on this issue because it's an extremely complicated one, one in which there are many texts, many books written upon. But more importantly, that the question of when does life begin is not so much the question anymore. People have really changed their mindset with developments in embryological studies and in recent scientific research. There was a time, particularly over the last 20 years ago, that people said, look, abortion's fine, IVF is fine, because a human life does not begin until the person has the functioning capacity of a brain. There was a time when people said IVF and abortion are okay as long as you do it before the child can feel pain. And it's a real dangerous topic because we can easily fall into this language of saying that embryo is something of a subhuman, not fully human. But the language that we must use is that from that moment of conception, from the moment the sperm fertilizes the egg, that is a human life, a unique individual human being. But there has been a clear shift away from those arguments. You won't find many atheists or pro-choice advocates using those arguments anymore. There's actually now a growing culture of atheists who are pro-life. They're called the Libertarians for Life. Christopher Hitchens himself, who was a post-abortion father, realised the value of the unborn child through the developments of science. He says, I'm not pro-life because I'm religious. He's not pro-life in a strict sense. But he's against abortion because he believes that child is a human being. He just disagrees as to when the mother should have the right to kill a child if it was deformed and those sort of things. But he still believes, as an atheist, that at the moment of conception, that is a human life. Science has developed to that stage now that very few are really prepared in the public forum to argue to the contrary. In his book, God is Not Great, Christopher Hitchens says this, and this is about his reasoning about why he believes, you know, a child from the moment of conception is a human being. He said, as a materialist, I think it has been demonstrated that an embryo is a separate body and entity, and not merely, as some really did used to argue, a growth in the female body. There used to be feminists who would say that it was more like an appendix, or even some seriously maintained that an embryo was a tumour that had to be cut out. That nonsense has now stopped. Of the consideration that I have stopped, one is the fascinating and moving view provided by the sonogram, or ultrasound. And another is the survival of premature babies of feather-like weight, who have achieved viability outside the womb. The words unborn child, even when used in a politicized manner, describes a material reality. So in talking about, when you get into debates about when life begins, it's important that you're aware in the scientific forum, things really have developed. Of course, there are some people that still insist the child is not a child or a person until 6 weeks or until the heartbeat comes or the brain. But they really are in the minority. Science is really proving them wrong. And I really encourage you to pick up some texts, really investigate that issue because it's quite fascinating. To talk about the actual scientific facts, however, I just want to say four things. Many people excuse the church's teaching as unscientific and excuse it as something purely based on scripture. But there are four things that we can say about the moment of conception. The first is that when the sperm joins the ovum, Two individual cells are united and become a unique human person that has the active disposition to develop properly into a more mature stage of human organic life. As again, it's so important that we don't describe the embryo as it. It's a very dangerous language. I myself can fall into it. Or we describe the unborn child, the embryo, as a reduced form of life. Sometimes accidentally when we're speaking quickly we can forget. We must say that at that moment of fertilization there is a unique human being that has the capacity, the actualized potential, to develop into a more developed human being. So as you and I are constantly developing to old age, it's exactly the same. It's important that we go back and think that Christ himself was once at that stage. That was human life. That was God incarnate. God, the sanctity and the sacredness of that place. The second thing is that even though we have received those cells from our mother and father, we are not the same as our mother and father. That goes back to that argument. Well, you're just a tumor off your mother. You know, you can just cut it out because you're part of your mother. No, at conception, 23 chromosomes from both parties form to create a unique DNA. That could never be made human. You can't make DNA that suddenly becomes human. It is human DNA from the beginning. The third thing is genetics. There is no difference genetically between you as you are sitting here and you as you were as an embryo in the womb. Genetically, you're exactly the same DNA. The fourth thing is that, well, to prove that, if you took a fetus or the remains of an aborted child at one of the abortuaries, and they did a study, they would say this was a human life. Scientifically, DNA, that is equally a human life. I think it's very important we really have fixated in our hearts and minds that our teaching, yes, is of course scripturally based, upheld by the tradition, but it is scientific. Human life from conception. And now we can talk about the specific issue of IVF, which is a very sensitive issue. Now, why focus on IVF? Well, because precisely as I said before, it is the most misunderstood of perhaps the church's moral teachings. I said Mass at a church recently in Sydney, and one of the acolytes was proudly saying to parishioners after Mass that they have just conceived their third child through IVF. And everyone started applauding. These were Catholic parishioners after Mass, and I was sort of thinking there, thinking, oh, my heart sort of sinks. What do you say in that situation? They simply don't know. That ignorance of those moral principles about really what is actually taking place, and that you can't do evil even to achieve good. Because so many people focus on the fact, well, it's a good thing to want a child. Life is beautiful, of course. To have a child is a magnificent gift. But it goes back to that issue, not every way in which we get a child is right. Now, in the 1970s, when IVF technology was first starting to develop, there is what we call the yuck factor was still present. You might have heard me speak about it before, the yuck factor. When abortions first started to be postulated, there was the yuck factor. People think there's something intrinsically wrong with that. Same when people first hear about conceiving a child in a petri dish, procuring sperm and ovums in this sort of thwarted manner, people felt yuck. But over time, as the media keeps talking about it, it appeared to be more natural, we become desensitized. And the yuck factor is decreased. But it just shows you how our moral compasses or our moral wavelengths, our attitudes to life, can be changed ever so slowly by the power and the influence of the media. Now, the principal argument you'll often hear people say why IVF is wrong is that it's artificial, it's unnatural. Many people use the same argument against homosexuality or homosexual activity. They say, well, it's unnatural, therefore it's wrong. It's sort of a weak argument in one sense, because many people in our world, well, they think nature isn't stagnant. It evolves, and it does evolve, it does change. It's not stagnant. It doesn't potentially remain the same. Now, of course, there is a degree of there's something, of course, very unnatural about those activities. But just to say it's unnatural won't get you very far. It's better to say that IVF and homosexuality are wrong. Because, yes, they are natural, because they are irrational. It's contrary to human reason. There's something about that that goes against what we know to be good. So rather than saying, look, it's wrong because it's unnatural, well, there are plenty of things the church says that are artificial that are good. Artificial ways that can help pregnancy, that are, in a certain sense, unnatural but are good. But they are rational, they are good, they help pregnancy, they help and promote human life. So that's the first thing. How does IVF work? So first of all, I'll talk about the intention, the process and the end. Now again, we go back to the intention, the desire. Mother and father who say they can't conceive naturally say, if only I could have a child. Now that intention is congruent with Catholic ethics. It's a good thing to want to have life. Go forth and multiply. It's a good thing. But the church says that anything that assists marital intimacy, anything that assists the reproductive process is good. But anything that completely replaces it or supplants it is wrong. Marital intimacy must be the key. That a child is conceived through the conjugal act of a wife and a husband in love. So now let's look at the process of IVF. What actually happens? In vitro means in glass. In vitro fertilization. So in contrast to a child that's been conceived through the marital embrace, child through IVF is procured through a few stages. First is the man goes off into a special room and he masturbates, normally to pornography. And that sperm is then put into a petri dish with eggs that have been harvested from the woman. So already we get to the first point. The church says that life must be conceived in the marital embrace, must be conceived in love. But this love, this form of procreation is conceived by a male being separated from his wife, goes off into a room. Generally, there's pornographic magazines in his room. He masturbates, and then suddenly those two, the sperm and the eggs, are put together in a petri dish. And through that process, multiple embryos are formed. Many. Many human lives are now formed. Okay? And each of those embryos, if given the chance, placed into the uterus and were conceived normally, would have the potential to be like you and I. Same potential. Absolutely the same potential. But immediately in that process, a third of those embryos are just discarded because they're detected if they have any abnormality. You know, parents can now say, look, as things progress, I want a girl. Technology is really advancing, so they can really look at these things. If there's any chance of Down syndrome or any other form of complication, they're just chucked away, discarded. So already before you've even started, you've killed a third of those embryos. And if you believe human life begins from conception, you have to say, effectively, that is killing human life. And then a third of those embryos are frozen so that the mum can come back if the first cycle doesn't work. And then as many as three embryos are then implanted into the woman's uterus. Now, the reason why three are implanted is so that there's more chance of conception, so that the hope at least one will attach itself to the uterine wall. So that's, again, I've just used the word it. It's not a good thing. It's a very bad language. In the hope that one of those embryos will attach themselves to the uterine wall so that a normal pregnancy can begin. Now again, even at this stage, because you've implanted multiple human embryos, there is a chance of multiple pregnancies. So if more than one child attaches to the uterine wall, then the doctors recommend something called selective reduction in multifetal pregnancies. So the mum says, look, I don't want multiple children, and it's very dangerous because often they can miscarriage. It's a very dangerous thing. The doctor pierces the chest cavity of the selected fetus, the mum gets to choose which fetus they want to kill, with potassium chloride, and those dead babies are then removed. So even at that second stage, quite often, it involves killing human life. So, in the hope then that from that very complicated procedure, you might one day have a child. Highly unsuccessful. So three things, three principal arguments as to why the church would say that's wrong. Now it's important to go back to what Bishop Fisher, before we go into what's wrong, what Bishop Fisher said. Any child that has been conceived, any child is always good. It's hard thing, I've been in classrooms and I've been talking about IVF and someone puts their hands up and say, I'm an IVF child. And it's very important that Catholics never say, well, that's a second-class child. It's not. Every child deserves equal love and respect and dignity. It's a very sensitive issue. But nevertheless, because it's sensitive, we still must speak the truth. The first thing, as we said, the first problem is it involves the destruction of human life. In Australia, 98% of embryos harvested through the IVF do not survive. In 2005, 5,073 women went through IVF. 36,333 embryos were fertilised in Victoria. This is just Victoria. 98% weren't used. And 98% unsuccessful. 98% of those human lives never really got to even see the light of day. There are, in 2005, we know as many as 40,000 human embryos in freezers. When I walk past in Melbourne, the IVF clinic, it's quite a stunning thing that inside those fridges, there are potentially thousands of human lives. A real moral question is, what do you do now? You've got 40,000 human beings locked in a freezer. So already you've seen that the process of IVF involves the killing of thousands of individual human lives. Human lives. Many of them now are used for experimentation. A couple of years back, John Howard actually consulted with the Cardinal and one of the Catholic bioethicists of Australia. And he himself was against the idea of IVF at the time. He was against abortion. He's quite good on some of the moral issues. But he could not come to agree that he thought, well, if they're going to die anyway, let's use them for science. So many people, many scientists have applied for permits to use those embryos for scientific experimentation. Now, you often hear the media, they say, oh, well, embryonic life, if we use those embryos, we're going to find cures for Parkinson's disease. Even we can even sort of test how we could sort of harvest for organs, for organ transplants. But interestingly, out of the five scientific research centres that applied for permits to do this sort of research, four of them were IVF. Four out of the five. So it wasn't really about using these embryos to promote scientific welfare or health-based research. It was more about finding better techniques to harvest embryos and to use them for other purposes. So that's the first thing. IVF obviously involves the destruction of human life. The second reason why the church is against IVF is that it separates life-making from love-making. The church says that every human being should be able to look back to their origins and say, well, I have a mum and dad loved, and out of that marital embrace came me. That incredible mystery about the sanctity of human life through the procreative act of a husband and wife. But when the child with IVF looks back, they know that they were conceived in a test tube, in a very artificial manner. It's a very different sort of thing. In Donum Vitae, which was the document about the church about respect for human life, was released in 1987. This document, believe it or not, actually converted some IVF practitioners away from the practice of doing IVF. It's a very important document to read. You can get it on the internet. And the document says that the child has the right to be conceived, to be carried in the womb, and brought into the world and brought up in a marriage. The good of society requires that children come into the world within a family, and that a family be based on marriage, the only setting worthy of truly responsible procreation. Now, I don't need to talk too much about that. We've talked about that in the theology of the body, about the importance of the sexual act being reserved to marriage to safeguard the children that are inevitably conceived through sexual activity. So that was the second thing. IVF clearly separates life-making from love-making, but life-making should be a product of our conjugal love. The third thing is interesting. It sort of follows on from that, but it's very much to do with the intention of why people do IVF. The third thing is that an IVF child is produced, not generated, manufactured, sort of as a commodity, a product of technology. And people often say, well, look, I have this desire to have a child. And of course, that desire is good. But that I will go to all lengths to get what I want is bad. When a child is conceived through the marital embrace, that child is a gift that is received. It's a life that's given. It's a received gift. Whereas through IVF, it's a thing that we've taken, we've desired, and we've manufactured. There's a very big difference in the theology. That is why people now go to the crazy step of eugenics. Bishop Anthony writes about this crazy scenario about two dwarfs who conceived a child. And when they had the ultrasound done, they noticed the child was normal. They wanted an abortion. because they wanted a dwarf child. See, it's about fulfilling my desire. It's no longer about a gift that's been received, this gift of human life that is a product of our love, an outflowing of that conjugal love. It's about what I want. So I'll pick the colour of the hair, the colour of the eyes. I'll choose even whether it will have abnormalities or be normal. It's a crazy thing. I often hear, and I've heard a number of times, Catholic parents who have gone to have the 13-week ultrasound being told, look, your child is going to have Down syndrome. Abort the child. That's the only good thing to do. And of course, these Catholic families say, absolutely not. It's a moral abhorrent. Now, I know of two families that have been told that. And when the child had been brought to full term, they were the expectation the child was going to have Down syndrome. The child was perfectly healthy. Could have killed, could have given away, again, not just an innocent human life, but a very healthy human life. Not that there should be any difference. But it just shows how difficult and how corrupted and how base sometimes our science can be. So they're the three main reasons: the destruction of human life, separating of life-making from love-making, and that life is being produced, not generated out of love. So finally, what is the Catholic response? And this is kind of what I want to talk, what Ron's going to speak about a bit, is about this is such a big issue, not just IVF, but how we as Catholics, young Catholics, can actually speak up in the public forum and actually defend the dignity of human life in so many different ways. Now, it is a very difficult thing when a couple come and say they're infertile. It's a very distressing thing. Or they say they can't conceive. Now, with the couples that I've dealt with, I often ask them, look, what alternatives have you looked at before IVF? And they often say none. Because the radio, the media, the doctors always say IVF should be your first choice. Because it's so expensive. Only has a 20% success rate, but it makes lots of money. Now, if you think about any other medical practice, if you think about any other sort of form of healthcare, if you were told it only has a 20% success rate, would you go through with it? 20% success rate. But that's the real statistics about IVF. But people go through with it because they really think it's the only alternative. With the couples that I've dealt with, often I've sent them off to do NFP through the Creighton method. Now, you can get this stuff on the internet. But quite often, people have trouble conceiving because they don't understand how their fertility works, particularly in the person of the woman. For some women, there's only one day of the month in which they are fertile. Only one day. And through NFP, you can actually work out what day that is. Now, the two couples that I've had that come and have said they were going to use IVF, I encourage them to try NFP, both conceived within 6 months. I'm convinced, you know, this is what we really need to get out there. We need to really promote that there are alternatives. But we're often shut down because the IVF industry is making so much money.
That was Father Greg Morgan with Manufacturing Life. Life to the Full is an initiative of the youth of All Saints Parish in Liverpool, Sydney. And for more, visit cradio.org.au.